We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
Hi, everyone. We see you coming in here. Thank you so much for joining us. We are going to go ahead and get started. We are so excited to have Principal Bo Ryan here. Yes, he is still in the field and he's incredible. And we just completely love his energy and just like the dynamic of obviously his intelligence, but also his presence still in the field of education. I can continue, but I will start this presentation here. All right. Welcome, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us for Brilliance of the Building, Affecting Change in Urban Schools. Our presenter for today is Bo Ryan. He is a principal at Anna Grace Academy of the Arts, 6th through 8th in Connecticut. All right. Your presenter for today, I'm going to read a short bio here. Bo Ryan is the principal of the Anna Grace Academy of the Arts Middle Magnet School in Bloomfield, Connecticut. He is passionate about building and sustaining professional learning communities, creating high-performing teams, and supporting urban educators. He has worked in education since 1994 as a teacher, coach, director, adjunct professor, and principal. Bo is certified in PLC's Response to Intervention, RTI, Transforming School Culture and Priority Schools in a PLC at Work. Bo is also a certified Marizano Associate. He has led two schools to model PLC at Work status, with his current school also recognized as a Marizano High Reliability School. Oh, that's amazing. When does he have time? He will let you know in a minute. All right. Lastly, navigate to solutiontree.com/buildingbrilliance to further learn about the book that he will be referring to today. And here we go. All right. I'll go ahead and hand over the presentation to you, Principal Bo Ryan. Thank you so much for your time and for being here.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Prisma. Okay, I'm ready to go. Hello, everyone. I'm Bo Ryan. I'm the principal of Anna Grace Middle School, also a Solution Tree Associate, also the principal of the Brilliance in the Building, and I am so fired up to be here. But I want to just start and thank Solution Tree. I want to thank Dr. Marzano. I want to thank Jeff Jones. I want to thank EdWeb, Miss Regina, Miss Prisma, Miss Lisa, all from EdWeb. You have been fantastic. Thank you all for taking time to be here. Thank you all for your work on a daily basis. Let's crank this up and let's have some fun, and hopefully you can learn something from me today. Okay, quickly about the book, I just want to show you, one of my mentors actually endorsed the book and says, I love how Bo Ryan makes the case for leveraging the collective expertise of the staff. That's from Ken Williams. He is the author of Ruthless Equity, and he also helped me with the title of the book. So he was a great help. Another one, Dr. Anthony Muhammad, who's one of my mentors, talks about the brilliance in the building and the specific guidance we give staff in urban education. We have three outcomes today. So you're going to be on part of this. The three things that I really want to get across, number one, build shared knowledge of a culture of care. What is that? What does it look like? Two, create a culture of collaboration in your school. And three, utilize a culture of collaboration to ensure learning for students and staff. So I suggest you get a pen, you get some paper, you grab some napkins, you grab a sticky note, whatever you need, write some of this stuff down. The purpose of writing this book was to give staff hope, to give you resources and tools you can use immediately. They're all in the book. And staff, the Brilliance in the Building, can use those tools to make change immediately. How to plan out, how to create assessments, how to collaborate, all of the tools and resources you can begin immediately. Okay, so my why and my reason for writing the Brilliance in the Building was based on this thing, which is called a portable. And I grew up in an urban neighborhood, and a lot of us would walk up to the school. So it'd be six of us, seven of us, sometimes 10 of us, sometimes 11, and we'd all walk to school. Many of us went inside the building. And we had classes inside there. Many of us kids in my neighborhood went to this, which is the portable. The portable was outside the school. their access to the education in the building was mostly in this portable. We're not talking about access to the curriculum. We're talking about access to the school building. All those kids that walked with me that were in that neighborhood, none of them graduated high school. So this is a big reason, and it's a visual for me in order to write this book to support urban educators. In the middle school I went to, I also struggled. I wasn't in there, but I struggled. My mom was someone who really fought to make sure that I focused on learning in school. She created a Scared Straight program. I don't know if there's any folks out there that know what that is from MTV. She created a program where she connected with police, and I sat with the policemen, and they talked to me about things that I'm doing now and the impact it can have in my life. My mom passed January 6th. I'm dedicating this to her. Without her, I don't know where I'd be right now. She did that. She created the Scared Straight program. She also changed her work hours in the emergency room from nighttime to daytime. In the city, you work at night, overnight. That's way different than the daytime. So she used the daytime to come check on me in middle school. So I owe people. Then my father sent me to this prep school when I graduated. I barely graduated high school. He said, you got two choices, the Army or prep school. So I wasn't going to the Army. So I chose, I didn't know what prep school was. I really couldn't get into the place. He knew someone. It was someone he coached, and he got me in. Cushing Academy in Ashburn, Ham, Mass. Changed my life. So I am speaking to you from as an educator, as a principal, as an author, but I'm speaking to you and all those kids out there that need support and help. And I was one of those kids, and all these people helped me. My mom, my dad, my family, my beautiful wife, Keisha, Wayne Sanborn, who got me into the prep school. I had nowhere to go, nowhere. So he got me into prep school. Rob Janica, who ran the Boys and Girls Club, where all of us from the neighborhood went down. Mike Ferry was my middle school principal who worked with my mother. My mom was the only one that could get in school without signing in. She walked down the hall. Is that your mom coming down the hall? I looked down there. I said, yeah. Mom, what are you doing? Get over here. That's what she would do. Dennis Goldman, who was the wide receivers coach at Syracuse, is like a second dad to me. Paul Pasqualoni, who was the head coach at Syracuse. The list goes on. But all those people are behind me, supporting me through this webinar. And those are the people I owe. It's my reason for writing Brilliance in the Building. So the Brilliance in the Building book is really, I wanted to create a book so you folks can start the work immediately. They could use the tools, they could read through the book, and they'd be able to start the work immediately and get going. So there's over 200 resources. There's 35 reproducibles. There's tables, there's figures, there's strategy implementation guides that you can kind of see where you are. Are we at the PLC? Are we next level? Are we at not at PLC? And you could use those in order to improve. It's tough for us in urban schools to get out and go to a PLC training. It's tough to go out, and then who's going to bring that stuff back? Then who's going to coach the whole school up? All that stuff is in this resource that I wanted to make sure I can create so people can make an impact like Cushing Academy had on me. We can make that and have that for schools all over the country. So this book has been 20 years in the work, in the making. It's a lot of editing. It's a lot of revising. It's a lot of real school work. And then me collecting the work and then saying, you know what? I got to add this or adjust this or edit this and make this a little better. So the Brilliance in the Building was created to support people immediately now in schools. The big focus of the book is action. It's one of the top things. So I wrote a book before this that you never heard of. It was called the PLC Priorities. It was not good. So Dr. Wheatley, Miss Wheatley, who's in charge of the books for Solution Tree, she said, Bo, I like you. You want it straight or do you want me to run around and give you the BS answer? I said, Miss Wheatley hit me. She said, hey, this work ain't, it's not working. I want you to write a book about urban schools. I want you to write a book about how to do what you have been doing in your school. And I need you to do that. And he said, what do you think of that? And she said, and we don't want you to focus on all the things that's wrong with urban schools. I said, I like that. I want to focus on action. And she told me, that's what you're going to do. So in the book and a lot today, I'm not going to dig into stats and a lot of research. And I'm going to tell you what you can do to make a difference. It's all about action. If you care enough to take action, you'll do it. So let's go. Let's get this going. So here's the first piece is urban challenges include operating in a densely populated area, poverty, greater racial and ethnic diversity, and more frequent rates of student mobility. And we'll hit some of those in this now. What I can tell you, I have memories of growing up in an urban community that's the greatest ever. So we don't want to make this seem like this, it's the greatest neighborhood ever. I remember times we had neighborhood football teams. So our neighborhood would play to other neighborhoods throughout the city, and it was absolutely amazing. We had boxing matches. I mean, how many neighbors have boxing matches? We had two sets of gloves. Some people had to wear mittens on their hand because we only had two sets of boxing gloves. We had the neighborhood watch where my mom had people in the second floor and the third floor watching us. So if she went out, she knew that no one was sneaking out of the house. We had a guy named Herbie who showed up, and he had Intimate products in the back of his car, and you could get them for reduced rate, a dollar. My mom was a big bread and cookie person back there. Get some bread and get some cookies from Herbie. Here's $2. Go down. So I love the neighborhood. I love the city. I love Meriden, Connecticut. That's where I grew up, and that's the passion and the love that we all need for working in urban schools. A disproportionate number of Black and Hispanic youth live in poverty. In 2017, roughly 33% of Black youth and 26% of Hispanic youth live in families with income below the federal poverty level. How can we help? What can we do to help and support, knowing this, and help all these kids be successful? So my work is going to be grounded in a professional learning community concept. This book, Learning by Doing, I suggest you get it. Every educator should have this book. Picture this book as like being a first stringer. My book is like the backup, but this book is amazing. So there's been some cultural shifts and three big ideas. One, focus on learning. Two, collaborative culture and collective responsibility. Three, results orientation. So when we talk about collaborative culture and collective responsibility, we're responsible for all kids, not just that kid, not just that kid over there, but maybe that kid too. And everyone is going to help support all kids. And there's shifts in the professional learning community that are a little different than most schools. A shift in the purpose, a shift in how we use assessments, a shift when kids don't learn, a shift in responsibility when kids do learn, a shift in the school culture, and a shift in professional development. And we'll hit all those shifts today. I'm going to tell you, leading two schools to model status, but what I can tell you has been the books that I've read, thousands of books on PLC practice, and that all that stuff has been brought into the book I wrote. But in addition, I'm going to tell you where it started. Syracuse University. I was a graduate assistant football coach back in 1994. I know you're looking at me. Yeah, I'm old. But 1994, Syracuse University, I was a grad student and a grad assistant coach. Now you're like, wow, at Syracuse, let's not get this. I was sweeping floors. I was buying sandwiches for the staff. I did anything they told me to do. But I learned more about the principalship being a coach at Syracuse University than any course I ever took. I learned about team meetings. I learned about collaboration. I learned on focus of learning. I learned about getting better. I was fortunate the head coach, Paul Pasqualoni, was a former elementary teacher. The ability of some of these folks and coaches to teach and their leadership and their ability to collaborate. And they always talk, if they didn't have to meet, you ain't meeting. If the meeting's done, it's done. Everyone speaks, and then let's get going and let's focus on what is next. And but professional learning and all the principalship work I learned at Syracuse University, coaching football there as a graduate assistant, and started reading everything. The next piece, which is four questions of the PLC: what do you want students to learn? How will we know if they learned it? How will we respond if students do not learn? And how will we extend the learning of students who learned it? So that's the right work. When teams are meeting, we expect them to do the right work. These four questions, and we'll dig into them later, are really the four critical questions of a PLC. This should be guiding your work. So the first we're going to talk about is a culture of care. To me, in my strategy implementation guides, I start off with an anchor statement. The anchor statement kind of is the overall target that we're looking for. Culture of care, my anchor statement is teams care enough about students to take action on every practice and policy that has an impact on student learning and equity. So what I'm trying to say is, again, teams care enough about students to take action. Guys, you can sit there, you can talk, people can meet. We can say we're doing this. We're doing, what are we doing to help support our kids at the highest level to help all kids be successful? And it all starts with the staff in the building taking action. I found this out early on. I was a PE teacher in the greatest elementary school ever created in the north end of Hartford. And I ran a program. They asked me to come be the assistant director for this program called National Youth Sports Program. National Youth Sports Program, you have to have 500 kids every summer. You have to recruit these kids. They have to be the lowest income of the kids in the city. And you have to have a plan and follow, because they're going to come check on this grant every summer and they could stop your program. So the first year we did it, we did okay. And I ran the program. It was okay. The athletic director for Trinity College, where the program was based out of, said, listen, what do you want? Will you come back? The program went well. I said, no, the program didn't go well. We weren't doing what we were supposed to do. He said, so we weren't achieving. These kids weren't doing the best that they could do. He said, well, what would you do? I said, I'd get rid of that person. I'd get rid of that person. I'd get rid of that person. And I'm going to bring in folks that are going to come in here and care deeply about every single kid and do something to help support every single kid. And he said, do it. So we did that. We got rid of about 7 folks. We brought in 8 superstars. And that camp became the nation's number one most improved camp, and we won national recognition. It's all about adults, and it's all about adults who are caring about kids. So the action is, one of my mentors, Dr. Lewis Cruz, says, are you looking in the mirror and seeing how I can do something, or are you looking outside the window? I think I got that right. Looking in the mirror or looking outside the window. What are you doing to reflect on your actions? But that's a culture of care. Creating that system of culture where every adult is going to care deeply about the kids in the building. Okay, so a culture of care is a systematic feature of schools that ensure all students are educated in an environment where the administrators, educators, and others, school professionals and staff, respect and support one another and the students. Systematic is all people. Kids must be loved by all, no matter what the situation. Care is about supporting students to help them prepare and feel like they belong, feel like they're part of a community. So then when we ask them to learn, they can learn at high levels. That's why we're doing it. We're not saying, oh, we feel bad that a little Johnny don't have sneakers. Well, if that can make Johnny feel better, so he'll do better in the classroom, so he can keep moving up the ladder and learn every single day. That's why we're doing it. Some of the things we've done through the years that I recommend, we have right now a sweatshirt and hoodies where kids, if they need it, we can give them that. We have a calming room. We've always, in every school I've had, we have spaces where if kids need to go, we could support them in the school. We create a system to support kids and have them ready to learn. We have a program now called Braids and Fades, where if kids need free braids or if they need a free haircut, they can get that. It all started, listen, we've been doing haircuts for a long time. I've been doing this a long time. Meet us at the barbershop in the winter or in the beginning of the year. We'll hook you up with a free haircut. Then we have our school's name, Anna Grace Academy of the Arts. We have this wonderful Miss Nelba who saw that we were giving free haircuts, and she put it on Twitter. And then next thing you know, all these people donated. So now we made it where we're getting braids and fades, and it's become this really awesome thing. Friday, we have a school dance. We have the barber coming in to the school, all to try to make kids feel comfortable, all to make kids feel like they belong. It's important. And that's the culture of care that we really want to make sure we create in our schools. Schools that focus on caring relationships between adult and students and peers have the best opportunity to change the educational experience of students of color and create a college-going culture. That's the UCLA EASE Project. Again, that's very important. And it's all based on action and what are we doing to help and support all of our kids, especially those kids that need us the most. Again, easy to say, oh, I like kids, I like to be around them, but we want everyone in the staff a culture of care where everyone's doing what is best for kids. This one, all educators will tell you that they care about students for the most. It's why they are in this profession and choose to work in the urban community. However, stating you care is not good enough. You must respect a culture of care with actions, not just spoken words. So by actions, I'm going to talk to you about my father. My dad was a longtime football coach, and his goal was, yes, to win, yes, to do all, but he wanted to make an impact, and he brought hundreds and hundreds of kids to college, and hundreds of kids were able to get into college because of him. Hey, I didn't see him much. He was always bringing kids and supporting and going and helping everyone he possibly can get to college, and he helped up kids from other high schools get to college. And then the other piece he did was he had people who went on that he knew that didn't have place to live. They were living in a house. You'd come home and be like, hey, who's this guy? Hey, can I have the bed tonight? And you figure out and you'd have people living. But that's what I was raised by. Someone that cared deeply about kids, and he made a commitment to try to get kids to college. That's my dad. So when I started teaching at J.C. Clark in Hartford's North End, the first thing I did was we opened the school up every morning at 6:45. And guess what? There was kids all over the place coming in the gym. I was the PE teacher. It was lucky we had a door that would flip open. They can come right in, walk right in, and come right into school. We would have kids playing double dutch, basketball, hanging out in the bleachers, talking, some kids reading, some kids supporting. They all stayed. The 8 years I was there, we averaged 100 kids almost every single day. 7:45, I walked them down to breakfast, and then they went to class. So creating a culture of care starts with actions, and it all started with, and you'll hear me throughout this, mention adults and people who made a significant impact in my life, and I owe to support them and give back to them. So we got five actions that we're going to talk about of creating that culture of care. First thing, it starts with the staff. I can't emphasize enough how important it is to start with the staff. In the book, my book I have, Is This Candidate a Good Fit for the PLC? And there's a bunch of different things you can ask in the interview process. How can we make sure we highlight our school to help get the best staff there? But there's a lot of questions that kind of walk you through ways of in the school of finding the best staff. Dr. Anthony Muhammad, his books on transforming school culture were absolutely fantastic. And those books really reflect on looking at adult behavior and the types of adult behavior in order to impact schools. Can we be mission driven? And mission driven means, what's our sense of purpose? What's our why? Why do we want to do this? What are we looking to do to improve our school? Are we committed to students? And are we committed when it gets tough? Are we committed not only our first year, our second year, our 15th year, our 20th year? Are we still mission driven? Community and home visits here, number three, is humongous. Get into the communities. Get in and visit homes. This is my 30th year. I'd say I've done over 2,500 home visits in the communities. Go in. I'm not asking to go to Billy Steakhouse in the outskirts. Go into communities, meet folks, talk to them, see how you can support their families when they come to your school. And they'll appreciate that. And to me, it's the best. Walk around, meet people, talk to folks, visit families, bring supplies to them, and make sure that they know we care deeply about you. Relationships, and really looking at relationships as it forms to discipline and managing students. So two quick stories I have. One is the check-in program. When I became assistant principal, we had all these kids in this check-in program, kids with referrals. We had 12 kids. They accounted for, what I think it was like 90-something, 115 referrals, some massive number. I'm a new assistant principal. And I don't know much. So I said, I do know that I want to help these kids. So I visited other places. I wanted to know how I could support. And what we did was we created a check-in, check-out program. People checked into the school. People checked out of the school. And then came in with me. So I would have people come in, all 13 kids. How we doing? How can we help? And then they'd go back to the class. And then the teachers were checking with me to see how those kids were doing. If the kids were able to make it through a great day, then they would stay after school. The referral levels of those kids went down 97%. Which is pretty amazing, using a great check-in, check-out program. The funny thing is, I presented on some of that stuff, and people would say, hey, we tried this check-in program. It didn't work. I said, well, who was doing it? And they said, well, so-and-so. I said, does that person like kids? They're like, nah. Well, the program's not going to work. You got to care about kids. The next thing we looked at is we created a basketball team. A basketball team in the school. So when I was there, they said, well, listen, we got these 13 people that are really causing ruckus in the school. This was my first year teaching. So we created a basketball team, and it was a city basketball team. Listen, you think the Super Bowl is big? Coach a city basketball team. That's a whole nother level of competitiveness. That's a whole nother level of work. It is unbelievable. Basketball team. And guess what? We lost our first six games. For the next 6-7 years, we won about 95% of the games. But guess what? Zero suspensions, great attendance, excellent in classes. And that's what we wanted to do. Just think of the actions you could take in these schools. The next one, discussions on race and equity and taking actions. So really having those discussions based on action and things you can do. But you can't have discussions if you don't have a culture of collaboration, and we'll get into that. But again, these are five steps you can take immediately to create a culture of care in your school. Reflect and evaluate the adults. Be mission-driven. If not, figure out a way to get back. Look at your why and your purpose. Go in the community. Walk around. Feel the community. Understand what it's about. Relationships and the discussions on race and equity. Next piece is culture collaboration we're going to get into. To me, it is all about the team. It is all about structuring time for collaboration. And it must be the focus of any school improvement plan. I cannot say that enough. Hopefully this comes out in what we talk about today, but it must be the focus of every school improvement plan. Solution Tree, Marzano, High Reliability, RTI, Priority Schools, Doug Reeves, John Hattie, all those great researchers who are doing work in schools, they mentioned collaboration. John Hattie, High Reliability, again, all focus on the team and how important it is. So again, it has to be about teacher collaboration, and it has to be teachers collaborating about the right work. So teachers who collaborate with team members and colleagues, along with administration, feel a great sense of community within their school, creating a positive teaching and learning environment. So collaboration can create a sense of belonging with staff, especially staff in urban schools where it can get tough. Now you'll have a group that supports you and works with you. When I was a teacher in Hartford, I don't even remember who my mentor was. I don't ever remember having a discussion about classroom management, about instruction, about data, about creating a culture of care. I had no one. Lucky I had other people I knew and then met folks in the school and created collaborative time in between classes in order to get better. So again, that's really important. And again, creating that sense of community. Underserved schools are losing 20% of their faculty each year. 20% of their faculty. I think that's pretty amazing. Imagine if you're a coach and you have all these guys, and we used to talk about in the coaching world reps. So this guy gets all these reps and then he quits the team. Man, that all that work that you put in to try to help and support really goes down the drain. But imagine underserved schools losing 20% of your faculty each year. Imagine if you didn't have a plan for that. And then you have all these new staff come in and there's no support during the day that can help these folks. That's part of the PLC process. They also give you tons of support for all staff. So it's difficult to overstate the importance of collaboration in the improvement process. It is even more important, however, to emphasize collaboration does not lead to improved results unless people are focused on the right work. Some of these slides I'm reading aloud because there's a podcast that may be going on too, which is pretty awesome. So again, that's big, and you have to be doing the right work in teacher collaboration. And then COVID hit. So we started in Connecticut. First, everyone went home. People all went home. The second thing is half were home, half were in school. The third thing is what we're going through now is staffing issues. Some was staff not available for certain positions like math or special needs, and you have one person who interviews. How can we continue to focus on student learning? Imagine doing that work alone. Think about it. Imagine having all your kids at home and you're on Zoom and you don't have someone to collaborate with to discuss student learning with, and you're on a solo mission and you're not with a team. Imagine having half your kids in school, half your kids at home, and you're trying to figure that out. And then you have kids not showing up, but you're not a member of a team, so you can't come in and talk about those kids and have other people go find those kids out in the neighborhood and make sure that they're logging on every single day if you're an individual worker. So how can we continue to focus on learning? Imagine doing this work alone. So it's all about the collaborative team process. And this is big for me. This is really, really huge. And it's how we use our time in school. There's actually a page in the my book where I have you reflect on time. How much time do you have available weekly? What's the time and how to use time during the day? Any other thoughts on time? Create an action plan based on time. The central question for a meeting is simple. Will we engage in activities that ensure the collective intelligence of the group and therefore make better decisions collaboratively? If the answer is anything less than an emphatic yes, why are you holding the meeting? Like, how much time do we waste in some of these schools where teachers don't have time to collaborate together about what we want kids to learn, about how do we know if they're learning it, and creating plans to support kids who learned it and kids that didn't? That should be the focus. If not, you don't need all these folks. Send a memo. Send something else. But we must maximize time. We must use time embedded during the school day. We must use time outside of prep. And then teachers should lead it. Guys, you can have these coaches come in, but there's no one in there. In some of these urban schools, I've seen some of the greatest educators I've ever seen in your life. That's in that hallway right down there, way in the corner of the school, that some folks have never seen teach. Imagine the learning that could go on for a new teacher if you partner them up and you use time so they could learn from each other. Now that new teacher is now that super teacher down the hall that everyone should watch. And then you have a whole school of those folks. But maximize time, reflect on your time, and see how much time is wasted during the day. Okay, hope you all still here. Come on, we're still going. But think outside the box. So I've been in districts where PLCs wasn't a thing. So you may have to be creative with time. If you can't align your specials to the classroom where they go to specials, and we can get almost a double special block so we get our prep and then this collaborative time. Here's some ways Woodside Intermediate School was able to think outside the box. The first one, Woodside Intermediate School used to have recess before they would go into recess before lunch. So they brought in Wesleyan University football players. Those kids monitored recess, played with the kids, and did amazing work, and they did it for all three grade levels, 3, 4, and 5. The teachers used that 20-minute recess to collaborate. And we had stuff, this is what we expect you to do. We expect evidence to come back, so you guys, we're not bringing all these kids in, y'all ain't doing recess duty, and then you're out getting a 50-minute lunch. That's not how it works. So we made sure we brought in Wesleyan University, and they played football. Kids absolutely loved it. They played tag. And we gave our kids time, and we did that. Bus arrival. Woodside Intermediate School had a K-2 school, 3-5 school, with kids on both buses. So as they kind of, one group dropped off here, one group dropped off here, and then those buses rotated, you basically had 25 minutes of downtime. So they brought kids into the gym, 21 lines, put them in 21 lines, and had a morning meeting with everyone, and then that allowed people to go meet and have discussions and collaborate about student learning. Have assemblies. Allow teachers to leave if you feel you can manage it, if you have some folks, and then they could use that time for collaboration. Staff meetings. Allow time for collaboration and PD days. Save time by sending out a memo. Save time by creating a video and sending it out, and have absolute clarity on your memo. But the big part is you got to be creative, and you have to find time for staff to meet in teams. What are teams members working interdependently to achieve common goals for which members are mutually accountable? And there's a lot of teams. The first team you should create is some type of leadership team where you're all focused on student learning, collaboration, teacher learning, and results. In the book, I have a great reproducible that has agendas for guided coalitions or leadership teams. And it basically says what's your outcome, and then it digs into what's the topic, the task, and then what resources you need. So you can talk about grading, relationships, intervention data, instruction, learning blocks, what would be the task, and then what resources would you need. Or you can come in for an issue, look at the data and action plan. So again, really creating teams that are meaningful, not just throwing teams together in order to help more students learn. Grade level teams. The top team to me is content specific team in that same grade level. Intervention team for kids most at need. How can we support kids most at need? And then attendance team, which is part of that intervention team. But those are some of the teams you can create in a school and really make sure that meetings are focused on student learning and there's a process and some type of product that comes out. So you're not sitting in meetings talking about things that you don't need to. We want to make sure that we're following a script. And then when you get better, and as you do it over time, the meetings will go quick and it'll end, and then you'll be done and you'll have extra time. But it's all about meeting for the right work. So during team time, so during those times you're in collaboration, you have time, it's outside the prep, it's embedded during the day. What does it look like during that meeting time so we can become experts at the meeting? Guys, principals should not be leading the meetings. Coaches should not be. When we opened a new school 13 years ago, I was part of that. We coached teams up. Now we have teacher leaders who are running that. But it all starts with collective commitments, which are actions that teams commit to in order to make it a great culture. So are they committed to a guaranteed curriculum? Are they committed to meeting and creating common assessments? Are they committed to meeting and looking at data? Are they committed to a culture of care? So that starts there. And if you have that, others can hold each other accountable along with leaders in the school, but it starts with collective commitments. Team norms are the behaviors you expect during the meeting. And if you're starting this out, there should be norms and they should be reviewed during the meeting. So what do we expect? What will we do? We'll listen to each other. We're going to learn in the meeting. We're going to follow the agenda. If we're off task, like those types of things that the team creates in order to make sure meetings go smoothly. The roles, facilitator, timekeeper, focus monitor, and then the problem-solving steps are, if you have a problem in your team, in the book, I walk you through things you could do in order to make things better for your team. Big thing is coach the teams. Ensure the success of your teams. If you ask teams and you ask teachers to work and go do something and collaborate on something, they have to have the tools to make. And that's the greatness of the book, Brilliance in the Building. All the tools are there. Everything is made. We've used them in schools, revised them, edited them, read more books, created more stuff, saw how they worked, recreated. It's just nonstop. So the tools help you ensure the success of the teams and with great protocols. To focus the teams on the right work, collect evidence from the meeting, give feedback to teachers, and focus on strengths and celebrate your teachers for doing the work. If you get a product from the team, no matter what it is, and it's part of that agenda, and you feel it's the right work, man, celebrate your teams. Congratulations. Send something out to other teachers that we're doing a great job in the process. But celebration has to be a big part of coaching teams. So the big three steps to take in collaboration, maximize the time. Look at your time. Reflect on time. How much time are we wasting during the day when we could use it for teacher collaboration? Ensure the success of teams and then coach the teams. Okay. In my book, again, this is the strategy implementation guide. You can see here there's an anchor statement and then the next level PLC. Mastery of PLC is where everyone should try to be for collaboration, where educators are working in collaborative teams. The time is focused on issues most significant in improving student learning. Teams adhere to the expected norms. Leaders dedicate a 30-minute block. And then you can see next level PLCs. So this could guide schools of where you have to get to. And then everyone trying to get to mastery and then keep pushing the next level. And it's a tool. It walks you through all of the things you need to do. Next one is a culture of learning. What is the purpose of schools? Just reflect and think, like, why are we in schools? Do we have learning in our mission? And it's all about learning for staff and students. Student mobility is associated with lower student achievement and lower test scores. In urban schools, you got people going three schools. Some kids went to four schools. Some kids went to five schools. And then they come to your school. What are we going to do? What's the plan? How are we going to support these kids? How are we going to support our teachers? What other stuff can we do? Okay, so large achievement gaps between high social class and other students highlight the disparities in opportunity. And these gaps reinforce poverty and inequality. So you're at a brand new school. Everyone fails the first district assessment, even close. What would you do? What is something you could do immediately to help change your school? Questions like this happen all the time. Then what actions can we take immediately to help support all kids? The biggest thing I think is the learning block process that I highlight in the book, and it's something we've been working on. I have been doing for over 25 years, refining it, editing it, and making it better, is looking at blocks of time. Some of these kids in schools, we don't know to the report card, and then the kids are failing, or you don't know to the state test. And then why hasn't Johnny, well, or they're taking these tests with all these fancy names, and we don't know. What are they doing in the classroom? What teachers are teaching, are they learning it? So you can see here, it's the looking at a period of 4 weeks. You can look at 6 weeks. You can look at 8 weeks. But look at a period of time, give a pre-common assessment, and then after that, look at the results and then give kids support to prep them for the rest of the unit. Then high-quality instruction. Make sure we're teaching to the grade-level standards. And then come down here. Give something mid. See where they are. Meet with your team. Discuss. And then create a plan to help them. And then create a block at the end. So all those things should be also non-negotiables in your school. Culture of collaboration, non-negotiable. Guaranteed curriculum. Monitoring results. Taking action. All should be non-negotiables. Tools in the book. So in this, all should be psyched. So you do one learning block. You give them a little time. You do another one. It's the data. It's planning, ensuring a guaranteed curriculum, but also creating an instructional plan, creating CFAs, data team, and keep doing that in cycles. And you keep doing that, and you'll see kids improve. So the prior to block plan, let me just tell you, the prior to block plan is a template that's in the book. And in the book, the amazing thing is, I got the book right here. It walks you. It walks you right to look at that. It'll take you through all the steps that you need and clearly outline all of them. Greeting outcome and norms is the first one. You sit down, you greet everyone, you talk about the outcome, you talk about the norms. The next thing is you study the curriculum together and you look at the priority standards. And if you, hopefully in your district, you're allowed a little flexibility. Then you look at the create learning targets from those priority standards. Then you create learning scales, which are the proficiency scales made by famous by Dr. Marzano. Ours are a little bit edited. Then it's a pacing. Based on teacher knowledge, the brilliance in the building, they may say, listen, last year we taught this and they didn't get it after 3 days. We need 5 days. Making those adjustments on what is best for kids and then looking at grade level assignments. So these six things, greeting, priority standards, learning targets, creating learning scales, looking at the pacing of the block, and then focusing on the grade level assignments is that learning block plan. And you will keep doing this every time you have a learning block and you'll get better at it. The next piece is common formative assessments, read and review CFA protocol, create it, administer it, collaborative score. In the book, I walk you through how to create common assessments. You have to measure learning and you have to measure if kids are learning. Yes, you could teach it, but are kids learning? And if not, what are we going to do? After every CFA, have a flex block. Make sure we're having a flex block and you review for all kids who didn't learn and extend for those kids who learned. Then the last piece is the end of block data team process. And what that is you have time and it walks you through looking at standards, charting the overall data, looking at pre and post, indicating strengths and needs, and creating an action plan for those kids who didn't learn it and those kids that learned it. So again, high quality instruction, which I'm going to talk about in a second, is the team meeting to the classroom. All this work in the team meetings is going to spiral around, and we want to make sure that it goes back to the classroom. Guys, I'm so fired up. I hope you're all still there. Man, I love you all for coming today. This is fantastic. High quality instruction. Five quick things. All kids must have access to grade level standard. All kids must be in that class for grade level standard, and all kids must have access to grade level standards. Kids used to get pulled. They take them from ELA and give them reading support. That don't make no sense. Give them ELA at grade level and then give them during a block something, reading support. And then don't level classes. High class, grade level class. Guys, I was in high school. I was in one of those classes. They were fun, man. It was seven of us. You know, I was in one of those lower classes. Man, it wasn't going to get me to college, but we had a blast. Team meeting to the classroom, looking at your standards wall, which I'll dig into in a second, and then a teacher framework, which is a common language. What does your framework look like? Do now, mini lesson, deliberate practice with small groups and independent groups, closure with evidence, and reflect, and then having a culture of reading. I have a couple minutes here, so I'm going to try to fit this in, and I'm just loving this. I could go for 3 hours. We should go with the extended remix version. So high-quality instruction. This is a standards wall. You do this in teams on a tool that's in the book, and then you take that and you post it in your classroom, and then hopefully your kids, this becomes a learning tool. Imagine going into every single classroom in your school, and you see all these. You see all these posted. What is mastery of standard, and then what is the success criteria for grade level? And then what's approaching? What's the vocab and prereq skills we need? And then how can we push kids not to exhaust them, but push them to exceed? Okay, standards wall, high leverage strategies for teacher clarity, learning targets, success criteria, and really getting kids involved in the assessment process. Success criteria is amazing. Imagine if you created something and said, okay, now let me self-grade and see where they are, and I'm going to use that standards wall as an instructional tool. All five of these here are all, if you type in John Hattie and look at this, you'll see the research behind this. But again, I have a whole chapter dedicated to this in the book, but looking at the high level strategies, and you could guarantee if you have everyone in your school do that, that these things would be happening. You can get better at it. But these are five things: teacher clarity, learning targets, success criteria, formative assessment in class, using the standards wall, feedback to kids from the standards wall, and student involvement in the assessment process. Focus on literacy in your school. There has to be a significant focus, I think, in all schools on literacy, reading, writing, and discussion. And really, as Doug Reeves puts it, as nonfiction writing is one of the great tools or great strategies that we all can use. Make sure there's time to talk during the day about it. Make sure people have time to study the curriculum, especially if it's new curriculum. Make sure there's time to create CFAs and they use CFAs that's aligned to the learning block. Time to review assignments. And the goal is volume, reading, writing, and discussing in school. But making sure that collaborative time, people have time to learn about this and set goals together and talk about it. One of the things you could do is, and we've done that and have agendas, is talk about as a team, say if you're middle school, talk about how much writing you're doing and say, what kind of writing are you guys doing for this next 6 weeks? Science teacher may say, we're just taking notes. So the social studies teacher say, well, you know what? I'm going to do some more open-ended, more longer writes. And then it also gets our teachers to reflect on how many long writes are we actually doing? Are we just doing notes or are we writing open-ended responses? Are we asking kids to write? How much reading are we asking kids to do? Are we discussing? So those three things, focus on literacy in every class. And then the promise to families is every student guaranteed more time and support, no matter the teacher or grade in your school. Most schools, they may all offer no extra help. Some schools offer extra help. Can you say that every student is guaranteed more time? That should be the goal. We want every kid more time and support during the day in your school with the greatest people in the world, those teachers, the brilliance of the building to help support them. So can you guarantee it? And it's not just for those kids that are on reading intervention. What about all these other kids that we have to move? So there's ways to do that. One of the things that we have in some schools, you may not have, like some schools have like five interventionists that, and they don't have to cover classes. Like that's not the reality in a lot of schools. I mean, they got like two kids and they're working 20 minutes and they have all these reports and all that stuff, but we're not really grinding in there with the kid, supporting kids. So you have to reflect on your school first before you have a system that's created to help schools. So look at your current data. Look at priority standards. Do you have space for intervention? Some schools don't. Our school got flooded a couple years ago. We had to move down the street. There was no space. We had to figure it out. Resources, time, the building, transitions, cafeteria coverage. All that stuff should be focused on before you do anything. And then I talk about in the book difference between flex time and win time and how you can make, depending on the grade 6 through 12, but how you can create where no matter what staff you have, no matter how much space you have, no matter resources you have, you can guarantee every kid more time and support. Because not everyone's going to learn the same. Listen, I was one of the worst students in high school. I go to prep school. I figured out how to learn. I finished number one. I didn't even graduate with my high school class. My dad was so fired up. He said, you're going to Ashburnham, Mass. I didn't know where that was. And you're not coming back till next year. So I left in May of my senior year. I worked maintenance there. I was an awful maintenance guy. I was a big break guy, though. I love 10-minute breaks and 13. But anyway, I went there and didn't graduate with my high school, finished number one in my class, because when my dad said he was changing the locks, I knew I had nowhere else to do, nowhere else to go. So we have to create a system where all kids have extra time and support, and that's what I had at Cushing Academy. They found a way to give everyone time and support. Thank you, Mr. Sanborn, for getting me in. I know I technically didn't get in, but you got me in. Changed my life. Okay. The last part of this, and it's huge, is taking action, learning for staff and students with some things I'm going to talk about. Well, excuse me, this is what we just went over, learning blocks, high-quality instruction, supports for all. And it this last part I'm going to dig into is learning for your staff that's embedded during the day. So it's important to create a culture of continuous improvement in urban schools so cost-effective that adult learning occurs during the day in your building. It's funny, I've supported schools. I went to Kentucky, and I was walking. I went to all the classes. I'm helping the teams, and I saw this, I saw this young lady teaching. It was absolutely fantastic. So they asked me, what's your advice? I said, man, you need to get everyone into that class. Everyone has to observe that teacher, everyone, because it's being done. And you can't say it's not being done. You can't say it's not being done over there where they have those BMWs and those Lexus and all those. No, it's happening here, right down the hall. And now let's get everyone in the school part of that. How can we do that? How can we make PD where we have our teachers running the PD and facilitating? So the key is use the resources and the people in the building, the brilliance in the building for professional learning, and use those folks. Okay. The best PD is job embedded. It engages the people in the work. It's collective. It's aligned to goals, and it's based on results. So those four things, and I'm going to tell you what, the four things I hit in the book, and I hit five, learning blocks, book talks, instructional rounds, and staff as coaches. The learning block process is not only an incredible tool for students, but for staff. The collaboration, the learning about the curriculum, the focus on creating learning targets, the focus as a team of creating proficiency scales and learning from each other in order to create great proficiency scales so students can chart their progress, set goals, monitor their work, and be assessment capable learners. Imagine that. Man, imagine just great PD. It's job embedded, it's collaborative, it's aligned to goals. And staff can get better at all those. They can get better at creating assessments. They can get better at all that during the learning block process. And it's, you know, it's interesting. That process is aligned to Learning Forward's National Professional Development Standards. You could take all that, a learning block process, and you could coach those teams in learning blocks, see where they are, what support they need, and all that collaboration is great for students, it's great for kids, and guess what? You don't have to leave the building. You buy the Brilliance in the Building book, and you maybe have me show up once in a while, but I'm just going to tell you, you can do it with the brilliance you have in your schools. The next one is book talk. Guys, if you still have your pens, if you still have your pencils, if you plug in Greater Hartford Academy of the Arts middle school book list, you'll have 51 books that come in, and you can add those and create a PLC library. So the Greater Hartford Academy of the Arts middle school book list, it's from Solution Tree. And it has 51 books that we use to help create the school and support our staff. But book talks should all be focused on action. And one of the great things about books nowadays, like when I was there, I would have to go to Barnes and Nobles. I'd walk around, grab a mocha latte, something, and grab a book and sit down. Now, if you go on these websites, they're all by sections: leadership, social studies, science, literacy, assessment. And you could see which ones you need, but then you go research and you learn as a team and you get better. And then the last one, instruction runs. I can't tell you, I think it's the most fabulous professional development tool ever. I was a PE teacher, and I was fortunate. I went teacher of the year for the city. Principal comes up and says, hey, that's great. Now I need you to start helping out with reading. Teach PE, also help out with reading. And you have to go to this all-day training. Listen, I'm not big into all-day trainings, and I'm not big into – I said, can I go watch Miss Benone? Can I go down there to the hall watch Miss Herr? I got Miss Vargas around the corner. Can I go watch those folks? Because you want me to go into support in those classrooms, they'll teach me better than anyone, and that's what he allowed me to do. And then the last 3 or 4 years I was at the school, I helped and supported reading and taught PE, and it was absolutely amazing, and I learned so much from it. So our instructional rounds has an agenda, and it's a way of also giving professional development. Has a pre-round collaborative meeting. So as a team, you'd sit, you'd meet, you'd introduce the team, you'd learn, discuss what the focus is, you review the norms, you go in classrooms, there's norms to the classroom, then you go out in the hall, and you'd have the post-round meeting. You discuss what you have. Now, the norms: refrain from conversation when you go into class, don't interrupt the lesson, collect factual evidence, and do not share evidence of observations outside the team. You look at strengths, and then you reflect on your practice. What do you feel good about, and what new ideas do I have? And then we give a shout-out to those teachers that help. But it's a way of groups of teachers going into different classrooms. It's great for vertical teams. In middle school, it's great for all teams to go in any classrooms. And then staff as coaches, you can have multiple coaches do the instructional rounds in their classrooms. We have something called an academic fair where we go into different classrooms when there's no kids and they lay out common assessments. They have performance tasks laid out. They have their priority unit block plan laid out. They have their desk. So you can see all the products from the meeting, but then you can also check around the classroom. Wow, that standards wall looks amazing over there. Wow, you have great anchor charts over there. I love your word wall. So it's a way of getting better, but it's highlighting the teachers as coaches in instructional rounds and staff as coaches where they're peer observations and you go into class and they're the expert in the room. Three takeaways, and I'm thinking I'm at the buzzer. I think I got it. Takeaways: create a culture of care in your school. You have to care deeply about this profession. Man, we are so lucky. I used to spend summers jackhammering. Man, we're working with kids. This is the greatest. Special middle school kids, absolutely fantastic. Collaboration, figuring out a way to collaborate, but you cannot ask teachers to do it during their prep. It has to be beyond the prep. It has to be embedded in the day. And you have to ensure the success of teams, and you have to positively coach teams up. Like, you have to support them. You have to celebrate them. You have to thank them. And you have to highlight the great work that they're doing in teams. And then the last one, learning for students and staff, making sure you have a system for learning for students and for staff that's in the building. Use the adults in your building. Use the resources in the book, but use the adults in this building, in your building, to create an absolutely amazing place. The brilliance is in these buildings. Some of the greatest teachers in the world are in these buildings. My wife was one of the greatest teachers in the world. You go in her class, man, those kids were learning at a high level. You go in some of these schools all around. My sister is down there in East Granby. All these people are doing absolutely exceptional work. I could keep going. Thank you all so much. Brilliance in the building. Appreciate you taking your time to be here. I love you all. Questions and answers. I think my partner comes on the screen now. Yes.
Hi. Thank you so much, Principal Bo Ryan. That was so great. Like, I am so excited, and I'm not a teacher, but, you know, listen, I'm ready to go. We don't have questions in the moment, but thank you so much to everybody who's still here with us. We appreciate your time. Thank you for being engaged in this presentation as well. We do want to provide this one last slide. If you do want to request availability for Bull Ryan, navigate to solutiontree.com/BullRyan. If you want to leave us with anything else, Principal Bull Ryan, let us know before we leave the webinar. Yes, absolutely. So someone here said, Ken Williams said, love the positive energy and hearing your life lessons. Yes, definitely relatable. I can definitely relate to some of what you spoke about. And it's just very, it's very admirable, but also very reassuring that, you know, there's our educators who have had similar backgrounds that are continuing to fight the good fight. And many of you who are here also have reflected on that same thought. So thank you so much to everybody who is still here with us, and we're good to go.
Good morning, everyone. It's Bull Ryan. I am the author of The Brilliance in the Building, Using the PLC Process to Effect Change in Your School. And I'm so fired up. I am so excited to be able to talk to you about this book. There's years and years and years of research that's put in. So many resources, so many books that I use, so many schools, but it all started in my purpose and why I do this started in Marion, Connecticut. I grew up in the inner city, and as I went to middle school, I was not doing what I was supposed to. I was failing. I was almost failing out of the school. My mother changed her work hours. She was an emergency room nurse, changed from the day to the night in order to check on me in school and actually meet with my principal on a regular basis. In addition, I was getting in trouble in the neighborhood, doing a lot of things I should not be doing, middle schoolers should not be doing. She created a Scared Straight program in order to help me see this is what's going to happen to you in a few years. This is what's happening to you, some of your friends. This is what you're going to, the life that you're going to lead if you keep going down this path. So those two big things helped change my life. Then my senior year, I played football through high school, which really helped me. It really helped keep me so I didn't get in too much trouble. But then my senior year, I needed a place to go. My dad said, you got two options, the Army or prep school. He knew a guy from prep school that was running Cushing Academy, and it was a great friend of his. And he said, listen, we can't really get him in, but we're going to get him in. And they got me into the school. I left in May of my senior year, did not graduate with my high school class, went down there, worked maintenance, and did summer school, and really focused on academics and what I had to do to become a better person, a better student, in order to have a future. He did that. So I did that, and now I'm walking now. Let me paint this visual. Hundreds and hundreds of kids, beautiful prep school. I'm walking down the street. I just start tearing up. Why did I have this opportunity? Why was I given this opportunity? A kid who failed middle school, a kid who barely passed high school, kid in inner city who's running around doing things he's not supposed to be doing. Why was I afforded this? What about this guy in my neighborhood? What about this guy? What about this guy? They didn't have that chance. I had to make the most of this, and I had to be able to succeed at high levels. And since that day, I made helping others part of my life, and I wanted to make sure that I could do it. And then and support, because I was getting the support. So this book came about. I taught in inner city. I was a longtime urban educator, and I absolutely love it. And I think educators in the urban are some of the best you will ever see anywhere, hands down, but they need a resource. This is something you don't have to go to a fancy workshop. You don't have to go down there and meet. You can use everything you possibly can is in this book. You can start the work immediately. Hundreds and hundreds of hours and time was put into support so people can help. You can help your kids like I was helped. So here in the book, there's tons of additional reading resources. Tons. I use over 300 to create the book. There's tons and hundreds of resources in here to help support you. The first chapter is a culture of care. Are we going to care enough to help and support all kids based on action? It's easy to say, hey, I love kids. I'm working here and there. But what are you doing? What action are you taking? What support do you have? And what have you done to help these kids? Second thing is everything has a plan that says reflection and action plan where you can actually start planning immediately right in the book. Chapter 2,
culture of collaboration. That is necessary. You have to work together. One person can't do it. When I went to the prep school, it was everyone. It was Mr. Burke. It was Mr. Deacon. It was Mr. Sanborn. It was all those folks together helping all kids be successful. That's what this is all about, creating a culture of collaboration. Then I have what are called strategy implementation guides. So in here, it looks at non-PLC, master PLC, and next level PLC. So you can see where you are, and then you can see what next steps you have to do to take action. In here, you can see how to write a calendar to make sure that staff are collaborating. There's ways of looking at time, thinking outside the box, how to ensure the success of your team, how to have a leadership team, how to have vertical teams, how to have grade level collaborative teams with tools that support you for all this. Then when you're in the actual meeting, what are you doing? What are our collective commitments? What are our norms? What are the expectations we have for the plan time? And then what are the difference between collective commitments and norms? How are we running these meetings? The next chapter, which is pretty awesome, is a results-driven culture. Are you focused on learning in your schools? And then I walk you through in all of this. You can see the implementation guides there for all these. There's one for guaranteed curriculum, one for taking action by results, one by monitoring student learning. Then there's a piece in there called the learning block. Guys, we cannot wait to see how our kids are doing. We can't wait to the end of the semester. We can't wait till tests come out. We can't wait 3 weeks from now. Guys, let's go. Get your pens. Get this book. Let's make sure that we are looking at creating a results-driven culture immediately. And that's what it's all about. Teams meeting together, assessing, reteaching, grade level instruction, assessing, reteaching, meeting in teams, grade level instruction. Okay, then here's criteria for the priority standards and all these different tools that start to work immediately. One of the things that's most important in this, it actually walks you down how to run meetings from step one to step two to step three, four, and five, and how to plan out everything. It's right here. And then it gives you tips for how to create a common assessment. What does it exactly look like? And then data team meetings with all these tools, and you have everything. Then I dig into creating a culture of high quality instruction, what that should look like, and how to take the team meeting and all that work into the classroom. You want everyone to have great classroom environments. You want everyone to focus on standards. You want everyone to have learning or proficiency scales in all the classrooms. This shows you how to do it immediately in your school. And then the power of learning scales in your classroom that you created together as a team. Teacher clarity, success criteria, formative assessment, feedback, student involvement in the assessment product. All that is here. And then we dig into how to create more time and support if you're in an environment where you don't have enough sports. Like I was in places, we're in a factory building. You may not have space. You may not have staff. But what can you do to create a systematic process to help all your kids? Then the last chapter is fantastic, and I love it. It's a culture of continuous learning, what you can do in your classroom, and you don't have to spend a lot of money. Go to classrooms down the hall. Go to other classrooms down the hall. Some of the best educators in the country are in these urban schools. One of my favorites is instructional rounds. A group of people go to one class. They observe. They come back out. They discuss. They reflect. They go to the next class. The greatest PD, I think, is professional instructional rounds. There's reflection tools. And then in the back, there's about 35 resources staff can use. Guys, the brilliance in the building is something that I have worked years on in order to create a tool to support all educators in urban districts. And it just wanted to help. I have so much love and respect for all of you. Thank you so much for all your work. Thank you for all you do every day. Hopefully you use this tool to help every single kid so people like me and all these urban kids have a shot at life. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day. Go Brilliance in the Building. Have a great day.
That was so great. This is my second time seeing it.
Thank you so much.
And thank you, everyone who's still here with us. We truly appreciate this. There's so many of you still here. Thank you so much. And as you can see, the emphasis on Brilliance in the Building is so key because, literally you said in this video, Mr. Bull Ryan, that literally there's educators in your own building who have so much passion, so much heart, even after so many years of possible defeat because of maybe no collaboration or because of students, different areas or different difficulties. But like you mentioned, this is actually really important. So everybody who has been here with us, definitely look into this tool because it is a tool. It's not just a book.
Thank you, everyone. Appreciate you. Thank you, Ms. Prisma and the whole team.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.